Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
So we'll hear from Kathleen Vandrazzo from the Alzheimer's Society. So tell me a little bit about the work of the Alzheimer's Society.
So here at the Alzheimer's Society of Windsor Essex, our two main programs for clients are our day program and our in-home respite program. We also have supports for caregivers that include one-on-one support, counseling services, ongoing support groups.
So can you tell me a little bit about the nature of the day program and the supports given?
Yes. So our day program is here on site. We are located at 2135 Richmond. And we are open Monday through Saturday. Our core hours are 9 a.m. until 3 p.m., but we do offer extended hours until 5 p.m. Again, we have 25 clients per day, and we have activities such as bowling, arts and crafts, and music. It's basically geared towards the client's interests. We also do a lunch that's prepared on site by our staff team, and staff sit with our clients. It's most likely a family environment, a home environment, and we have a small courtyard that's outside for gardening, for exposure to the outdoors, and it's in a safe, secured area.
So can you tell me a little bit about how you go about reaching out to families and those affected with Alzheimer's?
So reaching out to those that are affected by the disease as well as their caregivers is something that we attempt to do on a daily basis. We have a staff team of almost 50 team members that are out in the community, whether it's at the college or a health fair or a client's home, and trying to spread the word about what it is we do here and how we can help. We often do receive calls from families about what we can do to assist them. Our first link coordinator, Janice LaForest, is our first point of contact for all families and caregivers. And all they need is a diagnosis of dementia. They can make a self-referral in order to attain any services here.
So, are there any challenges in providing the services?
There is. I would say right now our greatest challenge is our capacity. Between our day program, we currently have a wait list of over 10 clients that are waiting to start programs. In home respite, the wait list is similar. And there's always the greater need for our services. We are always working on looking at how we can reach clients and caregivers in a larger manner in Windsor Essex County. But again, right now our greatest pressures are that our services are needed and we never feel like we have enough to give.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the society, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Absolutely. I started here in December of 2013, and at that time, our day program enrollment was about 17 clients a day. And And over the course of the next year and a half, we grew our capacity to 25 clients per day, which was great. A recent success we had was our Saturday day program. We had 15 clients allowed on Saturdays, and we were looking at a very quick way to increase our capacity. We increased our Saturdays to 25 clients per day, and they were filled within the next 2 weeks. Another success I would love to discuss is our Music for Memory program. In 2014, we wrote a grant proposal to the WECF, the Windsor Essex Community Foundation, and that was for personalized music playlists for persons with dementia. And we were awarded the grant. We received 20 iPods along with iTunes donations, cards that we were able to put together for clients. And the music is geared towards their interests based on what they say and what their caregiver might say. And that project was extremely successful. All 20 clients that we had had positive results. So, for example, we had a gentleman who had a hard time expressing himself verbally. And in the last 3 months, his daughter had said, "My dad, you know, he's very astute and he has a very hard time expressing himself, expressive aphasia." So she said, I don't think you're probably going to get too much out during the session." And after one listening session with him, he was able to share with us that he was going to enter the priesthood when he was a young man. And that music reminded him of that time. He then met his, now wife, and they got married and raised a family, had 5 children. They were all bilingual. Music was a huge part of their life. He was able to tell us what his mom and dad did for a living, what he did for a living, and we called his daughter after the first session and explained to her how much he had shared with us, and she was in tears. He came to us weekly during our day program, and he would bring a briefcase with CDs, and we called them our meetings, and he would come, and we'd download all the CDs onto his iPod, and as his daughter had mentioned, it really gave him a sense of purpose, a sense of meaningfulness again, and the meetings, as he referred to them as, are really what enriched his life while he was with us here in our day program.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Of course.
So, Angela, can you tell me a little bit about the coffee break?
Sure. The coffee break is an activity that we run with the Alzheimer's Society of Windsor Essex County. It's one of our largest fundraisers. And anybody can run a coffee break or host a coffee break. It's any social activity where you're able to collect donations. So we supply the coffee, we supply the cups, and you just supply the people in the location. A lot of people pair it with a bake sale or s'mores day or sandwiches or whatever they like to do, or sometimes even a barbecue. The possibilities are endless, and definitely we'll work with you whatever you decide to do. So we would love for people to get involved. So if you want additional information, please give myself a call, Angela, at 519-974-2220, extension 237.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with
Shannon Armstrong.
Will be telling us a little bit about the accessibility of an upcoming pasta dinner. Now, what can you tell me about this event? It's a fundraiser, as I understand.
Yes. So the Social Work Student Association is hosting a pasta fundraiser. It's an all-you-can-eat event, and the benefits of the proceeds go to the Can-Am Friendship Center, who right now is displaced because of the flooding that occurred at the end of the summer in Windsor.
So the venue itself... Are there going to be any accessible features that my audience might be interested in?
Yes, yeah, so we're having the event at the Fogelaw Furlon, and they're pretty great with maintaining accessibility. They have the doors that are available open. They've got a really spacious parking lot for people who might have to come in with like bigger vehicles and things like that. And we also, the students of social work are going to be volunteering there, and some of them are in the disability program, so they will be more cognizant to make sure that we have the space and tables aren't so placed together and seating accordingly.
Now, the Friendship Center works with First Nations individuals. It's interesting about the timing, as I just finished up a series on how First Nations people regard disabilities. It's a summit at York. So, were there any challenges in putting together the venue itself?
It was not challenging for me. Fogelaar, because they're seasoned in offering services for the community, and they also are a popular venue for fundraising events. And so it was, they were really helpful in being able to provide a big space for that.
So, if you could send any message to the community about why it's important to partner with these agencies, those who were affected by the flood damage, what would you say?
I would say that our community, agencies like the Can-Am Indian Friendship Center that provide service to our vulnerable populations, it's important for the overall wellness of our population to have access to community centers, to and services and programs that are culturally appropriate for them. So especially urban First Nations communities, so they don't feel excluded and socially isolated, much like those with physical or any kind of disability, having accessible events and having access to different programs and services for them as well. We want them to be socially included, of course, and of course, social inclusion is a very important part of mental health and as well as the quality of life.
There's nothing worse than the feeling of isolation. It leads to emotional disabilities faster than anything else. Fact is, our population, no matter where they're coming from, they deserve better than that.
Absolutely, I totally agree.
This sounds like a great event, not just for people with disabilities, but the able-bodied community as well. Being able to partner alongside an agency that was troubled and damaged by the flood, you got to figure there are all kinds of accessibility consequences. But for any audience member who wants to get tickets, where can they get more information about this?
Sure. All of our information about the event we've been posting on our Social Work Student Association page through Facebook. So if anyone wants to visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/SWSAUOW and find the Can-Am Friendship Center Pasta Fundraiser event, a lot of the information is in there. We are selling tickets online through Eventbrite. You can also purchase tickets in person on Tuesdays and Thursdays at the University of Windsor School of Social Work, which is on 167 Ferry Street from 10 to 12. And on Tuesdays from 10 to 12 and Thursdays from 11:30 to 1.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Oh, thanks for having us.
My pleasure. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
A Detroit-based cultural arts organization, Heritage Works celebrates the beauty and humanity of African people and world culture through movement, music, and folklore. Heritage Works believes culture is a rich resource for promoting understanding as well as personal and artistic excellence. When children, youth, and adults know their heritage, they raise their gaze, lengthen their perspective, and lift up their expectations for their own lives. Understanding and sharing culture builds a sense of community, develops leadership skills, complex thinking, resilience, and a sense of appreciation, and creates curiosity, confidence, and love. People, especially the young, need to help claim the benefit of this inheritance, the help Heritage Works uniquely provides.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Kathleen Vandrazzo and a little bit about an upcoming fundraiser from the University of Windsor. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Peter Field from the Alliance for Equity of Blind Canadians. So tell me a little bit about the Alliance for Equity.
So the name of the organization is the Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians. It's an organization that has been in existence about 25 years. It grew out of a couple of consumer-based organizations across Canada. So it's existed for the last 25 years as the AEBC, Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians. It is a national consumer-based organization representing people who are blind, visually impaired, partially sighted, or deafblind. So its mandate, if you like, is to provide a grassroots advocacy organization for people who are blind, visually impaired, deafblind, partially sighted, to advocate for their requirements in Canadian society, whether that be to federal government, provincial governments, municipal governments, that kind of thing. It's an organization in which chapters, so local chapters, they could be provincial, they could be municipal. Most of them are very strong. So the independence of a chapter to select the issues that they want to work on is very important. So in the Ottawa chapter, for example, with the development of a light rail transit system, that's something that the Ottawa chapter is keenly interested in promoting in terms of access to that full access, including issues like digital navigation using products such as Blind Square, which is a digital navigation product to get around the new transit station. So that would be an example of a local issue which the Ottawa chapter would be involved in. There'd be chapters at Montreal, Halifax, Saskatoon, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Montreal. I think I said Montreal. Toronto. So there's a number of chapters across the country. In the meantime, it operates as a national organization, so it has a national board, which is elected by the membership to represent the needs of the community to various levels of government. Could be businesses too, but most often it's government. So, for example, we are taking an active role in the federal government's development of a National Accessibility Act by presenting briefs and so on. We would get involved in issues coming out of the CRTC, Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission, around accessibility to broadcasting, to cell phones, to television, all those telecommunication needs. So in short, then, it's a consumer-based organization which has a national focus as well as a local focus in lobbying for and advocating for the needs of people who are blind, visually impaired, partially sighted, or deafblind across the country.
So what you mentioned earlier about Blind Square, could you tell me a little bit about how that works?
Well, Blind Square is one product. It's probably the best known product of digital navigation products. So Blind Square is basically a GPS, which uses GPS and or beacon technology to navigate. So when I leave my house, I can put on Blind Square on my iPhone. So I guess it would use a variety of platforms, but probably iPhone, and I guess it's developing an Android-based platform as well. So when I leave my house, I put on Blind Square. I'm immediately told what streets are coming up untold addresses. So you are at 232 Argyle Street or something in Ottawa, for example. You can select it to tell you what's around you. So it'll tell me restaurants, it'll tell me businesses as I get close to them or near them. So you can imagine the power of digital technology. If, for example, let's take the Toronto subway system. So using digital navigation, I could enter a Toronto subway station, and it would say, you're now entering Keele, 100 meters in front of you at 3 o'clock, you will find an escalator descending to the westbound train, something like that. So it offers a great deal of independence. And that relies on beacon technology, especially since you're now in an underground setting, so to speak. It would rely on the Toronto subway system, or in the case of Ottawa, the city of Ottawa deploying beacons within the LRT or Toronto within the Toronto subway system in order to for the digital navigation to work, because it's not going to use GPS and it's much more localized. So outside it's going to use GPS, inside it's going to use beacon technology, which is very, very cheap, very reasonable to deploy, requires some maintenance, but it's being used in the London Underground now. People go on YouTube and search for this, they'll see demonstrations of it being used in a large mall in Helsinki. And it's really where I think the industry is going, or this kind of technology is going for people who are blind, visually impaired, as a way of promoting greater independence within the community in general.
So in your time with the Alliance, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
That's an interesting question. I have not actually been with the Alliance that long. I've been affiliated with the Alliance off and on for about 10 years. I've only been involved in the Ottawa chapter 2 years, and I've only been president of the national organization 6 months. It's hard for me to measure any big successes so far over the first 6 months as president, but I think in terms of the Ottawa chapter, we've been able to bring together town halls or forums with the city, where we had the community there and the city there talking to them about issues of mainly transportation. So that's been very successful as a way of engaging the city to talk to them about the LRT system, about what they're doing, what we need, about accessibility to the bus system. Recently, I'd say in the last 6 months, Ottawa has installed exterior bus announcements on its city buses. So it's had interior announcements for some time, a couple of years, so that each stop is indicated verbally in an audio message while you're on the bus. Now, when buses arrive, it announces what bus it is and what route it's taking. That wasn't necessarily an AEBC-driven initiative, but some of our members were part of the consumer panel that the city of Ottawa set up to promote and get the exterior bus announcement system going. AEBC itself can't take credit for that, but some of its members were part of that initiative.
But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. One of the most salient points in today's show, folks, at least in my opinion, is the idea that a person with a disability should be able to get out there, be a part of the community. This was especially mentioned during the pasta dinner fundraiser interview. The There's nothing worse for a person with a disability than to feel they don't have that inclusion, that sense of purpose and belonging. That's not a disability that needs to exist for anyone. Something we as a society tend to impose on others. But the simple fact of the matter is, you can't go around creating the impossible standard. You can't say, oh, we'll accept you because you look this way or move this way, what have you. It has to be universal inclusion. But I'm not so pessimistic as to think the world is built strictly on people who look out only for themselves. I don't think everyone's just saying, I have this solution for accessibility. That's good for me. I'm going to keep it to myself. No. It's exactly why I wanted to do that interview. To ask the question, is this venue accessible? Can people with disabilities benefit from it? Truth is, this should always be on someone's mind. There should always be that consideration that says, we want as many people, as many diverse people as possible to be a part of this. The fact is, with the flooding damage that was mentioned, a lot of accessibility barriers were, in fact, created. The truth is, it could take a long time to repair that damage. It could take a long time before there's any sort of structure within any facilities that are being upgraded. Now, truth is, when a lot of things were built, accessibility just wasn't the key factor. It was, do we have a place to send these people? But in modern times, we're starting to look beyond all that. We're starting to look at, when I build a structure, does it have wheelchair access? Does it have a door button? Does it have Braille? Is it accessible to everyone? Because if the answer is no, what on earth are you doing it for? You'd simply be limiting yourself and your client base. So my friends, I put it to you, we should always look at, is this inclusive? Did anyone take into consideration the simple need for contact, companionship, being a part of those things that make life enjoyable? A person with a disability is no less entitled than anyone else. This also ties into Peter's interview when he was talking about accessible navigation. Fact is, a person with a disability needs to be able to get where they're going. But upon arrival, you should always expect to have a certain amount of accessibility, even if it's just the baseline. Those standards exist for a reason, folks. It's not simply tokenism. It's not us saying, oh yeah, we're going to do this for a good public image. We're going to say we're fully accessible and actually not live up to those principles. For us, maybe, in some ways, it's a token thing installing a wheelchair button. But for someone who actually needs it, it is a matter of consideration and respect. And more than that, the right to access. One of my favorite guests of all time, Samantha Newmarch, talked about how she held a door for a person in a wheelchair. At the time, it gave me pause to wonder, is it just what we do as a people? Is it simply common courtesy? Or does it send a message to that person? I respect your equality. I respect your right to access. And that is a message we should all try to convey at any time, in any situation. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.